This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. 50 years ago this week, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Wilderness Act.
The Wilderness Bill preserves for our posterity, for all time to come, 9 million acres of this vast continent in their original and unchanging beauty and wonder.
It says an area where the earth and its community of life are untrammeled by man, whether man himself is a visitor who does not remain. In the 50 years since then, how well have we done at protecting our nation's wild spaces, and why does it matter? Joining me now is Greg Applett. He's Senior Science Director at the Wilderness Society. That's an organization that was instrumental in getting that legislation passed 50 years ago. Welcome to Science Friday.
Well, thanks for having me.
Can we talk a bit about the genesis of the act? How and why did it come about?
Well, the genesis of the act actually started in many years before before 1964. There was an effort by some of the early preservationists, John Muir, Aldo Leopold, Bob Marshall, to try to get places set aside to preserve their roadless and undeveloped character. A lot of those early guys worked with the Forest Service, who had a program of wilderness designation. But over time, developmental pressures led to a kind of a constant battle to try to keep those places protected. And so some of the staff of the Wilderness Society, led by Howard Zahneiser and joined by David Brower with the Sierra Club, developed the Wilderness Act to try to put the decision-making power in the hands of Congress to make those wilderness designations permanent. And they worked for 8 years, from the mid-50s until 1964, through many, many versions of the act before it was finally signed by President Johnson.
And it had a wide bipartisan support in Congress, did it not?
It did. There were, I think in the final vote, there was only one vote opposing the passage of the act, which is a far cry from the situation we face today.
So you don't think it would be passed today if it were brought up?
It would be at least as long a battle, and I think it's safe to say that we wouldn't see those kinds of vote tallies today.
And what did the act do? What parts of the country did it affect? Where would we see it today?
The original act actually designated a little over 9 million acres of national forest wilderness. But as importantly, it set up a process whereby the people could nominate and work with members of Congress to designate more. And what we've seen in the intervening 50 years is the growth of that system from that original 9 million acres to over 109 million acres today.
Did anyone think about including the oceans in that act?
I'm not aware that the oceans were considered during the development of the Wilderness Act, but there have been a number of initiatives in the last few decades to try to get ocean wilderness designated. It's not currently part of the Wilderness Act.
And as I read it before, it says an area where the earth and its community of life are untrammeled by man, where man himself is a visitor who does not remain. So this is a place that you can visit, but you can look but not touch?
Well, the important word in that phrase that you cited there was the strange word untrammeled, which was intentionally chosen by Howard Zahneiser in writing the act as a word that conveyed not untouched, because many places actually bore the signature of past human activity. Important point about the word untrammeled is that it means it's equivalent to unshackled or set free. And so the idea is that once an area is designated as wilderness, it's to be set free to function on its own without a great deal of human intervention.
So we're not talking about like national parks wilderness, like the parks out there. Something even more untouchable. Untrammable. Untrampable.
Yeah. Right. There is no mention of untrammeled in the Organic Act of the Park Service, but But national parks have very high standard of protection as well.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, I guess, a kind of control group, right? Left over as much as we could to see how the rest of the world develops around it?
Yeah, well, one of the specifically recognized values of wilderness that's mentioned in the Act itself is its value to science. And, you know, it has value as a place where we have designated, you know, very high quality ecosystems with high ecological integrity for study, but it plays just as important a role as a place that we don't manipulate, as a place that we don't manage, and that allows us to compare against those places outside wilderness where we are engaged in management activities and to determine whether those management activities are successful.
So it is open then for research, for a study, for scientists to go in and examine the flora and the fauna there.
Absolutely. Research is encouraged in wilderness. Now, you know, in conducting that research, it's important to adhere to the principles of wilderness and not engage in manipulative activities except as absolutely necessary. Fortunately, the Aldo Leopold Wilderness Research Institute, which is a interagency group based in Missoula, Montana, has worked out some protocols for some kind of questions that researchers can ask of their research to determine if wilderness is an appropriate place for their research and how to and work them through the process of conducting research when wilderness is the appropriate place to work. Mm.
So then is wilderness just a human, a man-made process or the description?
Wilderness is a real, very real place. Of course, wilderness designated under the Wilderness Act is the result of a human process, but it's a very real place that embodies these important qualities.
Give me an idea of some of the iconic wilderness places.
Well, some of the early ones that were designated are places like the Bob Marshall Wilderness in northern Montana, which is the area kind of surrounding and south of Glacier National Park. It's one of the largest in the lower 48. The Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness in central Idaho is the largest wilderness area in the lower 48 at about 2 million acres. But wilderness can be considerably larger than that up in Alaska, where it gets as large as the Wrangell-St. Elias wilderness in southeastern Alaska. That's almost 10 million acres in size. Hmm. But wilderness can be very small as well and still provide important values to the public and to the scientific community. There are places like Pelican Island off the coast of Florida that's only 5 acres in size but is a really important resource. And then wilderness can be, despite popular opinion, right next to very highly populated places like New York City has wilderness within just a few miles of it. So,
do you need permission if you go into a wilderness area?
Usually, the agencies like to keep track of who's using the wilderness so that they can understand what the impacts of use are. But and so sometimes there is a permitting process that one has to engage in. But wilderness is open to be enjoyed by the people.
Yeah, and I guess it's a place, since it's under study and is wild, it might be a place to study global warming in these places.
Absolutely. It's important as a place to study global warming. It's also important as a place to, in our sort of arsenal of strategies to address global warming. You know, as a conservation strategy, wilderness has been spectacularly successful. And even though the climate is changing, it would be kind of silly to abandon it as a strategy now. But it also has been cited as an important strategy from the standpoint of just relieving ecosystems of the other stressors. It's important to know that climate change is just one more stressor on these ecosystems, and on our ecosystems, and to the extent that wilderness relieves ecosystems of some of those other stressors like habitat fragmentation and pollution, overuse, land use change, it can be an important strategy. And then, as you mentioned, it's going to be increasingly important as a scientific control to compare against the climate adaptation strategies that we engage in outside of wilderness.
Are there any areas that come to mind out there that you think should now receive a wilderness designation?
Well, there's actually quite a few places that are under consideration in the Congress right now. And some of those places have a pretty good, a lot of those places have a lot of local support and even have considerable support among members of Congress if the Congress could act. Places like here in Colorado, where I am, we have the Hermosa Creek Watershed Protection Act near Durango that through a long process of negotiation and compromise has identified 38,000 acres that we think is that the group thinks is worthy of wilderness designation. There are places in eastern Tennessee and western North Carolina that would add acreage to existing wilderness that are really important from a biodiversity conservation standpoint as well as recreational resource.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Greg, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Greg Applett is Senior Science Director at the Wilderness Society based in Denver, Colorado.